My name is John Cullen, and I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and curling. It's the story of Broomgate, how a single broom, yes, a broom, turned friends into foes and almost killed the 500-year-old sport of curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate, available now.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Q. Thanks so much for listening. Before we get going, I want to let you know that if you want to follow this podcast on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts, I learned the other day in a meeting that makes a big difference, and I was encouraged to, Tom, let people know who listened to the podcast to follow the podcast. So, hear this, you can hear the check mark on my page. There it is, there's the check. It wasn't that long ago that if you wanted to be a sketch performer and get noticed and headline shows all over the world, you'd have to play in some kind of basement show somewhere, and then some Svengali like Lorne Michaels would come around and pluck you from obscurity and send you towards riches and fame. Thanks to TikTok and Instagram Reels, there's a generation of performers that found their audiences directly, like Laura Ramoso, who got a lot of attention online for these videos where she'd do impressions of her very German mom.
So you are alive. I thought that somebody had abducted you in the night, but it turns out you are just sleeping in. Sleeping in. Sleeping in. Yeah, keep sleeping in. And you will see I will make you sleeping out.
Or her dad, her very Italian dad, making dinner.
A tavola.
A tavola.
Oh,
a tavola.
A tavola.
A tavola.
So here's the thing. Yeah, sure, you have millions and millions of Instagram and TikTok followers, but like, does that really translate to hard tickets? Laura Ramoso sold out all of her shows at the legendary Edinburgh Fringe Festival in Scotland. She sold out the Soho Theatre in London, sold out shows all over Australia and New Zealand, and here at home in Canada. You know, here at home in Canada is an interesting thing because, as you're about to hear, even though Laura lives in Toronto and sort of came up performing in Victoria, BC, Laura's actual parents worked all around the world. So she grew up in these different countries all the time, and maybe that's what gave her an ear for nailing an accent or a trope. I had a great time chatting with Laura Ramoso not that long ago. Since she just sold out another European tour and announced shows in Los Angeles, Ottawa, and Toronto, just in case you missed it, we thought you'd like to hear it again. So yeah, viral sensation, making fun of your parents, and how they feel about it. Here's Laura Ramoso. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so happy to be here. You are a legend, and I'm so honored.
What are you talking about? Thank you very much. That's nice of you to say.
That's, yeah.
How are you doing?
That's just the truth. I'm great.
Well, you are too, man. I mean, you are. I'm not at all. You are. Because I was telling you before we turned the microphones on that when they said you were coming on the show, I said, oh, okay. And I'm sure we're having someone from TikTok on the show. That sounds good to me.
You always sound a little disappointed.
No, I wasn't. I was like, sure, okay. You know, I'll do what's asked of me. And then when I saw the videos, I was like, oh, I know her. I know her from TikTok and I know her from Instagram. So it's really cool to have you here.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
Well, I'm going to let you know. It's all down. Okay. It's all downhill from here. Also, I asked Jen, our producer, if you were punctual. Mm-hmm. And you were. Mm-hmm. And then because... one of my favorite videos you do is when your dad, the night before a trip.
Oh, right. Yes. Yes. He won't go to sleep. He'll sleep in his clothes. It's a whole stress thing. Yeah, yeah.
And we were like, I wonder when her dad would have shown up to this interview, like 3 hours before.
3 hours ago. You would have been at Mo for Coffee. Just on John.
sitting around waiting.
Yeah.
So 700,000 TikTok followers. Let's talk a little bit about the journey to get here. So mm-hmm. You studied at theater at University of Victoria.
That's right.
How did you end up at UVic?
Well... I was born in Italy and Italian father, German mother, but we moved around a lot, lived in a bunch of different countries because of my mom's job.
Where'd you live?
We lived in Cameroon, Azerbaijan, China, and Vietnam. Lots of moving around, lots of friends changing. But then I graduated from high school and I'd been in North America, but I never lived here or ever had real experience here. And I just wanted to come to North America for the quintessential college experience.
Right.
So I went to Victoria, BC.
How did you land on Victoria, BC?
To be honest, my high school counselor had a poster of the campus on her wall, and it looked really beautiful. And I sort of assumed it would be. And it was.
Yeah, it is lovely out there. So you studied theater.
Yeah.
And like more traditional theater.
Yes, like classical theater.
So tell me the story about, because there's a story here about how you ended up getting into comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had always thought that I'd be more of a classical actor. And after my bachelor's in theater school, I would go on to do more extensive training. So I thought, where's the best place to go? And I decided to audition for Juilliard, the drama school.
Yeah. I've heard of it.
Yeah. I was going to say it's not known. But it is known.
it's an obscure theater school in New York City.
Yeah,
okay. I've heard of it.
Yeah, black box.
And I hear they're trying to, I think they're trying to get on their feet a little bit.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what's going
they're
on.
Looking
yeah.
for funding.
They're doing,
yeah. yeah
there's a GoFundMe for Juilliard
there
happening
is.
Right now.
There yeah. is.
A lot of people don't know that.
He's so true.
I recommend you. Okay, so you're thinking to yourself, hey, if I'm going to do this theater thing, I'm going to go to the creme de la creme.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to try. I'm going to go for it.
Okay.
I signed up to audition because first you send in an essay and then they run auditions in Chicago, New York, and LA every year. Or sorry, San Francisco every year.
Yeah.
My first year I went to New York and made it through a bit of the process and then eventually got denied. And then I decided to audition another year in a row the following year and went to Chicago this time to audition.
Yeah.
Side note, completely bombed this one.
What did you do?
I did, you had to do a classical monologue and then a contemporary monologue. And I think I did Helena from Midsummer Night's Dream. And I started, I think, with my contemporary monologue. And this is, you never want to hear this in a room. You walk in. They're like, okay, great, go. And I'll start my thing. And then in the back of the room, you just sort of hear just a weary breath, a sigh. And you think, oh, God, that's not me. I'm not it.
Okay, so you're thinking to yourself, the Juilliard dreams may not come true.
May not come true. Coincidentally, and I don't know if this is fate, do you believe in destiny?
Are you asking me?
I am.
Sure.
Okay.
For the purposes of this interview, yes.
Okay. That very trip, I believe it was that very night, I wasn't feeling so great about my mega bomb. And, you know, I'd sort of peripherally heard about Second City and the sort of North American sketch comedy and that style. Never really looked into it. And Chicago, the birthplace, I thought, oh, this looks fun. It might cheer me up. And I had a bit of a epiphany in the theater watching the main stage cast that night. And I was in awe at what I saw and I could not believe what they were doing. I couldn't believe this was possible. I had no idea this was an art form that could be done that way. And I thought, oh God, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what I want to do. And then since then, I lived in Victoria for another year after,
uh-huh.
produced my own Second City style sketch show, which was terrifyingly horrible.
And not just terrifying, but no, terrifyingly horrible.
Horrible.
So horrible it was terrifying.
Yes.
Right.
And then moved to Toronto because there's a Second City here. And
there
that's
is,
why
yeah.
I moved here. I started doing classes. I did their conservatory program. I did all the classes I could from all of the other comedy theaters that offered them.
Yeah.
And then I started to produce my own shows. And then I wrote my first hour and I did it and then did sketch festivals and went back to the States and performed or did San Francisco and Chicago Sketch Fest. And then
was it going okay?
Was it going okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was going great.
It was going all right. Live comedy was for you was going well.
It was going well. I felt like I was on a path and I had found and I was discovering and then COVID hit and everything stopped.
Yeah.
And that's when I started to make videos.
For what? For TikTok, for Instagram?
TikTok and Instagram. Yeah, short form reels and
but
TikToks.
The first ones weren't so personal, right?
The first ones were...
They were more classic sketches?
Oh, no. Yeah, the first ones were more classic sketches. I was really trying to figure out what my style was going to be. It was a big struggle at first to make videos. It's totally different than writing a stage sketch. And it took me a long time to figure that out.
What was the sketch that blew up? What was the sketch that did better than your friends and your family liking it?
So
I like how you nod, by the way, when I ask the question.
Oh, yes.
Yes, I know.
I know that.
I know the answer to the question.
And I will answer now. Get ready. It was like a couple of sketches that were kind of doing better than the others. That being what you look like when you put money in a street musician's guitar case. And the other one being what people say when they find out I'm from Italy. Those were kind of building a bit more momentum.
What do people say when they find out you're from Italy?
I can't believe you sound like me. You should sound like this. Ciao, bella mamma mia. And they're going, and then people also, the three P's, people always bring out the three P's. Oh my God, the pasta, the people, the presents. Yeah.
And okay, so these do well.
These do pretty well. And then I think a couple of weeks after that, I posted my first German mom sketch, which was what my German mom says when she visits me in Canada. And that really was the first full viral one. And then everything else kind of followed.
I promise I'm not going to do this the whole interview.
What?
But can you tell me what your German mom says
when
she visits you in Canada?
Ach, Laura, I have never in my life seen so many adult women wearing overalls. Do they think they are babies? Do they think they are a big baby? Yeah.
Spectacular.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You are.
I won't get you to do it.
Oh, you can.
Okay.
It's okay.
Then I will.
It's okay.
Tell me about your folks. These are your folks, right?
Yeah.
Tell me about them. Tell me about your dad first.
Okay. My father. My father's from a small town in northern Italy called Arcole, which is 20 minutes outside of Verona, which is Romeo and Juliet.
Mm.
By the way, a girl who finds out I'm from Italy goes, oh my God, that's Romeo and Juliet. Part of that sketch. And he sort of grew up in a very small town, very Catholic family, traditional farmer's son. And then sort of had his own epiphany in some sort of way and decided that living there and following the traditional lifestyle was not going to be for him. So he left and started working with NGOs in his 30s. Started traveling, and actually he met my mom then when he lived in Burundi.
Didn't he have a theater background?
Yes, he did. He also, prior to that, went to theater school in Bologna and then was performing as a commedia actor in a troupe for a while in Italy.
So you had some kind of knowledge or some kind of like, maybe the word is maybe even acceptance that like, oh, a life in the arts, a life in theater is okay because my dad wanted to have one for a while.
That is what you would assume.
Only now am I realizing that would have made sense.
Yeah, that would have made sense. Except no. Here's what I'll say is I think my parents need proof. And so it was like, show us that you can do this before you quit everything else and do it.
Tell me about your mom.
My mom grew up in Germany.
Where in Germany?
In a small town called Weinheim outside of Frankfurt. Mm-hmm. And she went to medical school later in Poland, but she became a surgeon. And actually, my mom is an astounding woman, incredibly disciplined, incredibly hardworking, went to medical school in Poland and taught herself Polish throughout. And then also similarly to my father, quit, went back to school to get a master's degree in infectious diseases, specifically against tuberculosis, and then moved to Burundi to begin her NGO work. And that's where she met my dad.
I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. More of my conversation with Laura Ramoso coming up.
Hey, I'm Candace Lim.
And I'm Rachel Hampton. We are the hosts of ICYMI, Slate's podcast about internet culture.
And we want to help you make sense of the need-to-know internet stories of the week.
Consider us your internet historians of past, present, and future.
Of the good, the bad, and the truly unhinged.
From nuanced takes on stories we're all closely following to the ones you wished you heard about.
In case you missed it, that's ICYMI, the podcast that's extremely online, so you don't have to be. Follow and listen now.
You must have been very, in all seriousness, you must have been very aware that your parents were very impressive, disciplined, but very impressive people.
Yeah. Yeah, I was. It was very inspiring, intimidating all at once. Yeah.
What is the experience like of having to switch, and not just, I mean, it's hard enough to switch schools in a town or in a province, to switch schools and switch countries every 5 or 6 years.
I think I would say it was easier as in elementary school, but then once you get to the middle school, high school age, it's more challenging. It's hard to leave friends and friend circles, of course. And looking back, it was very, it made me who I am and made me adaptable, and I wouldn't change it for anything. But it had its challenges, for sure.
Did it make you funny?
I think it made me, do you think it did?
I mean, I don't know you very well. I'm only getting to know you now. I mean, I don't know why I've never been asked that question before, but let me see.
Are you going to nod?
Yeah, I'm going to nod. I will answer this now.
Yes, good.
I can say personally, when I found myself in uncomfortable situations in school, being funny helped me get along with people and be accepted a little bit sooner and get people off my back a little bit. So maybe that's why I'm asking.
Yeah. I always thought that I became funny because of natural and normal growing pains of the difficulty of being super tall or not conventionally attractive or being very awkward in middle school. I always thought that. But I do think that my upbringing has something to do with specifically the kind of comedy that I love to make, which is very observational comedy on like the day-to-day life and the people we meet on our day-to-day. But I think that's because when we lived in so many countries and I was forced to coexist with people from so many different cultures and backgrounds, the things that we could relate upon were your everyday relatable human behavior.
Yeah. Not the hot button issues of the time, but
no.
What our parents say to us.
Yes.
Or how insufferable our friend is.
Correct.
Or that kind of thing.
Yes, that's absolutely right.
I mean, what a gift. Yeah, and it leads me to understand maybe why you're so good at the person who just came back from Berlin, girl mm-hmm. just came back from New York. Mm-hmm. There's another one.
Amsterdam.
I had an affair with a Stroopwafel.
The what museum?
Oh, you mean Vincent van Gogh.
Vincent van Gogh.
What's your favorite one of those?
I had so much fun doing Australia.
Can you give me a little bit?
Yeah.
This is the girl who just came back from Australia.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do I want a coffee? Oh, God, no. I'll have a flat. What?
I understand that now. I mean, you've experienced a lot of these people
yes.
over the years doing the kind of work that you've been doing. I sometimes find TikTok really intimidating. I don't think that's uncommon for someone like me.
No, I don't think that's uncommon for almost anyone. I think people who are on TikTok find TikTok intimidating.
Did you find it intimidating?
I do. I don't open the app. I don't open the app unless I'm posting.
Really?
Yes.
What?
Yeah. I find scrolling through TikTok and seeing the content that people are doing highly intimidating.
But you have to be one of the most successful TikTokers in terms of the videos you put up, at least from Canada.
I like to keep grounded by staying off it because I'm not influenced by what others are doing.
Yeah.
If I see somebody, for example, I've had issues with this where I get in my head about the amount of times I'm posting because TikTok is very like post. Lots of people post every single day, sometimes multiple times a day.
Yikes.
And by nature of what my videos are, it just takes me like 20 hours to edit one video, and I can't do that. So if I spend time on TikTok, I start to feel bad about how much I'm posting. I'll do about once a week. But I'd like to stay off because it messes with my process.
Tell me about your process. So I think people would think that it's, you know, it's like 30 seconds of just holding up a camera to your face and doing a video and then posting it right away.
It'll be like 20 to 30 minute raw file.
No.
Yeah. Of which the longer it goes, the more I feel inside me a sense of disgust at the length of the video that I then will have to edit.
Down to what, 45 seconds?
Maximum 1 minute.
Maximum one
yes.
minute. Okay, so you have 30 minutes of raw footage that you have to, and then so then the editing begins, just best jokes, right?
Just best jokes. And the thing is, the script that I've made is just hitting the lines because in the editing comes so much of like the order changes. You know, I add jokes that are just added through editing. Like I like to cut, for example, a character will say something three times and the third time I'll cut it in the middle of her sentence. Like I'll cut her off.
Yeah.
Can I put my wallet in your purse? Can I put my deodorant in your purse? Can I put my book in your purse? Are you mad at me?
But that only happens in editing. I don't really have an idea of that when I'm filming.
By the way, can I kind of tell you, I find that so funny, that editing that you do when, like, there's a funny line that's cut off halfway through. Do I sound like I'm a million years old right now?
No, actually, you sound like me. So am I a million years old?
Yes.
Okay.
yes. We are here together.
So the editing has so much potential, and it can be so overwhelming because it can make the same footage can be made into so many different iterations of video.
Right.
And then, yeah, it'll take me on average 15 to 20 hours to edit one video.
What's TikTok fame like? Because I'm just thinking about how, like I said, like I didn't know you by name. Mm-hmm. But when I saw you, I went, oh my God, that's her. I know her from TikTok. Do you get a lot of that? Like sitting down having dinner and someone, you're the, you know?
Yeah. Just the other day, I was in the grocery store, and a woman comes up to me and she said, I've been watching you, and I have to say, you are a little more serious than I thought. You know, I thought you were going to be walking around these grocery store aisles doing funny things. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, what could I do? What? Slip on a banana peel or
rolling
like
honeydew
squirt
melon
flour?
Squirt flour? Like having one of those squirt flour?
Like, what sort of gags am I? I'm like, what sort of hijinks am I getting up to at the grocery store? And that's been so interesting. But everyone is so nice, and I love talking to people, and it's been such a joy. Really, yeah.
Thanks for coming in.
Oh,
you're
thanks for
really
having me.
Funny.
Oh, I appreciate it so much. You are incredible. You're incredible.
Get out of here.
Okay.
That's my conversation with Laura Ramoso, who's currently on tour. She'll be performing in Los Angeles on May 7th. She just announced some shows in Ottawa and Toronto in September. You can head to her website, lauraramoso.com, for more information. You can also follow her on Instagram and TikTok. She's at LAU_Ramoso. So as I mentioned earlier, I have been encouraged to let you know to follow this show on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. Press the follow button. There you go. It's a good thing to do. I like to follow the shows that I like, so hope you follow it. If you want to get in touch with the show, q@cbc.ca is the best way to reach me. On Instagram, I'm @TomJoePower. The other conversation we have up today is my chat with Hangama Amiri, one of the kind of the brightest new lights in textile art. And if you're thinking to yourself, if there's something in the back of your mind that sees like textile art is slightly below visual art, like slightly below painting, Hangama Amiri has been thinking a lot about that. She'll tell you about her story of being forced to flee Afghanistan, finding herself in Canada, and how she's trying to change perceptions around textiles. Go check that out. We'll see you soon. Later on.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.